Welcome to the World Service Conference 2019 Fellowship Day. My name is Sammy, and I'm a debtor. Please join me with the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. A word to newcomers. If you are having problems with money and debt and think you may have be a compulsive debtor, you have come to the right place. Debtors Anonymous can help you. We offer face-to-face telephone and internet meetings, and we suggest attending at least 6 meetings to have an opportunity to identify with the speakers and become familiar with DA before deciding whether or not this program is for you. If you identify with some or all aspects of compulsive debting, we hope you will join us on the path of recovery and find the peace, joy, and love that we have found in Debtors Anonymous. This session is being recorded. The recordings will be made available on the DA website. Please turn off or silence all cell phones for the duration of the meeting. To preserve anonymity and respectfully ask that no one be identified by full name or photograph in published or broadcast reports of our meeting. The topic for this workshop is step 8, 9, and 10.
Okay. My name is Jerome. I'm a debtor.
Hi, Jerome.
I'm from right here in Los Angeles. And I am the Intergroup Service Representative to the World Service Conference from the Southern California Debtors Intergroup. So I'm talking on step 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. I read it because, needless to say, I do know it. But the words of these steps are so very, very important. In fact, I especially sensitive about the 12th step, which says, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. It's not that. That's not it. That step says, as the result of these steps. And there's a story about Bill Wilson when he was asked about the steps when he was late in life. And he said, you know, I didn't really write those steps. There was an angel sitting on my shoulder dictating them to me. And I just wrote them down. I just copied them out. Now, whether that's true or not, I don't know, but I love it. Because he was only a couple of years sober when he wrote the big book and so forth. And if you know people like I do, recovering alcoholics like I do, you know that no alcoholic I've ever met was capable of writing something so profound and that it would affect so many people. It is clearly divinely inspired. So, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. A lot of people make a big deal about the steps. And I think there's a total of 7 different books written by different intergroups around the United States anyway, that are guides to doing the 12 steps. Here in Los Angeles, we have something called the Yellow Book, which in typical DA fashion, we borrowed from Overeaters Anonymous, with permission, of course. In the early days of AA, not to talk about other programs, but I usually say we're not supposed to talk about other programs, but its initials are AA. They did these steps in about 2 or 3 days, you know, or overnight even. And now people agonize and agonize and agonize for months and months, years literally. And the reality is that if you're new in this program, the sad truth or the good truth, whichever way you want to look at it, is that you're going to be doing these steps for the rest of your life. It's not a one-shot deal, and you don't have to be as comprehensive as I think a lot of people think. But the key to this step And people get uptight about these three steps. You know, made a list of all persons we had harmed, became willing to make amends to them all. Nine is the hard one. Make direct amends to such people whenever possible, except when to do so and injure them or others. And 10, continue to take personal inventory. And when we're wrong, promptly admit it. 10 is the one that refers to the rest of your life, really. And we do these steps not for ourselves, not for the person we're making amends to, but of course we're doing them for ourselves. And it's important, again, to focus on what that particular step says. And all I got to do for step 8 is go and look back on my step 4, where I made a list of all my resentments and stuff like that, and convert that into a cut and dried list. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. A list of people. Made a list of people we had harmed. And, you know, a lot of people put themselves on the top of that list. And that's just true. This is a self-destructive program, a self-abuse kind of a program. A lot of us are very masochistic, but I won't get into that because it's much too personal. But, obviously, I talk to stream of consciousness. And so we make our little list, and then we just think about it. You know, am I willing to make amends to this person? Am I willing to make amends to that person? Believe me, when you first do it, you sure as hell don't have to be willing to make amends to all of them, you know. The list should be thorough. But you don't have to, I don't believe in forcing yourself to do it, at least in my own experience. I grew up in a very, how much time do I have here?
It'll be 5 minutes and 2 minutes and 41 seconds.
That comes to 7:41, right? Hey, I ended it up right. That's a first for me. So I'm going to tell you my personal experience. And this isn't indeed. I should say that a lot of people in this program come from other programs. I sponsor a couple of guys. One guy's been in, you know, in AA for 7 or 8. Well, actually, 18 years. Another, and he's only a few. He's new in this program, and other guy was 4 or 5 years, and they've both done all these steps already with an AA sponsor. So they don't have to go in. I guide people to, and they're in this program, to focus on the money issues. Where did you screw somebody out of $100, you know? And keep it to the financial aspects. And don't worry about all that other stuff you've already done in some other program, OA, AA, whatever. But focus on the financial issues, the money issues. What's your relationship with money? Because that's what we got to figure out. Not really figure out. I mean, there's no step that says we figured it out, which I would insist upon, but because that's my character defect. I have to figure everything out. My father once says, Jerome, you're too damn smart for your own good. And it's true. I am too smart for my own good because I want to figure everything out so I can control it. It's self-will run riot in my mind, you know. But the thing about it is that you want to make a list that affects you as a compulsive debtor. And then, you know, become willing. Willing. And willingness is the key here. Now, I'm going to digress to that other program, which will remain nameless, but its initials are AA. It took me, I grew up in a very dysfunctional family. My father was a rageaholic. I was telling a story at lunchtime that I wear an alligator belt because my father used to beat me with one. And it's in memory of him and in memory of the fact that I used to provoke him to beat me because I knew I was torturing him as much as he was torturing me. You know, it was my way of getting him back to make him do it, you know. And I become a nerd to it. But it took me 10 years in program to make amends to my father. And to not, I didn't forgive him. I didn't have to forgive him. I had to, but what I needed to do was come to terms, 5 minutes, thank you. Come to terms with the way that affected my life. Come to terms with it. I could handle that much. And I had to apologize for him for provoking him that way, you know. And it took me 10 years to become willing, just to because I was so enraged. No, it was so unfair. Can you imagine beating a 7-year-old kid with an alligator belt? I'm not going to forgive anybody for that. Forget about it, you know. Even in jails, they don't forgive people. You know, they call them short eyes, people who are mean to little children. You know, they're the one anathema person in a prison is the person who abused children, and usually they don't survive it. So it took a lot to make amends, to make amends for my side of that equation, because they're always two-way streets. You know, they're always two-way streets. We always, if we react to something, then it's our responsibility. We're responsible as grown-ups for our reaction, even if it was a reaction of a 7-year-old. It took me 15 years to be willing to make amends to my mother, because she stood by and let it happen. And I thought, and to me, that was worse. That was worse. Your mother's supposed to stand up for you. You know, it was so hard to become willing to take responsibility for what was my part in that. My part in that was I broke her heart. I reacted to the way I was treated, and I damn near killed myself over the years, you know. And I said to them in my mind, I'll fix you. I'll kill myself. Then you'll be sorry, you know. Now, I didn't go out and commit suicide. I've never been suicidal, but I've lived the most dangerous lives of anybody I know, and the most destructive. And I've had the best education money can buy in America. I've gone to the best schools, best colleges, 5 different graduate schools, and flunked out of everything, failed at everything. And I was too smart, you know. Duke Law School, that's bullshit, you know. These people don't know what they're talking about, you know. It's fear of success. I could not allow myself to be successful. The only thing I was really, I could allow myself to be successful at, my escape from my dysfunctional family and my dysfunctional child. I was the youngest of 6 kids, so they all adopted my father's policy and beat the shit out of me. You know, it was all passed down. And so I climbed trees. I could escape from my big brothers and climb all the trees, go way, way up at the top of the trees in my backyard. And nobody could see me up there, you know, and nobody could get me, and nobody could hurt my feelings, and I was home safe. One more minute. Well, after all those graduate schools and all that stuff, I became a certified arborist, so I still get paid to climb trees. My profession, money grows on trees. Today I am arborist to the stars. I have all the movie star clients in Los Angeles. And I was telling somebody at lunch today, I charge people $300 to come and do an analysis of their trees. And just while I was here just the other day, I didn't even go myself. I sent my foreman to look at somebody's trees, and the damn tree was dead. Oh. And I said, Manuel, tell the guy that'll be $300, please. Just to tell him. So it all worked out pretty good. But one time, after 15 years, I'm a 000. That's my time is up. But I just wanted to tell you, finally, 15 years in sobriety, and that was about, that's 10, 12 years, 15 years in program, about 12, 11 years in DA. My mother came out from New Jersey, came out here to visit her sister in California, and we sat on the beach in Malibu, Westward Beach, where you can watch the sun go down. And we sat there in late afternoon with the breeze coming off the ocean. And all I did, I just said, Mother, I'm sorry I caused you so much pain. And that was it. And that she lit up like the sunset. She made her so happy. And it resolved all that for me. You know what I mean? I came to terms with that resentment. Thank you very much.
Hi, everybody. My name's Sarah. Hi, I'm a debtor, spender, and under-earner from Philadelphia. And I'm going to talk a little bit about step 9, the hard one. made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. And that's always been the out for me, that part about except when to do so would injure them or others. Like, well, bringing up the past, really, just bringing that, rehashing that stuff, that wouldn't help anything, would it? You know? Like, how long can I escape doing that? And how long will that fester in my mind, thinking about it, as I continue thinking, oh, I don't have to bring that up. And then every time I see the person, oh, I don't have to bring that up. And when I go to sleep at night, oh, I don't have to bring that up. So it's not really an out. Yeah, the hard part of step 9 is not doing it. I love our literature. And in our steps, one of the things it says is the common thread was self-centered fear. To move us from preoccupation with ourselves to willingness, humility, and service. Yeah, because the not doing it is just about fear. Fear about how I'm going to be perceived. And certainly, I don't want to bring this stuff up again because it reminds me that I did harm to someone. The willingness for me to see that, for me, I'm a perfectionist, and I've learned that as much as I may try or think that I am, I haven't quite managed to be perfect. Something always comes up, you know? Something, if not everything, always comes up. And I can't live a perfect life. I can only live a human life and the life that my higher power wants me to live. And for me, that's what step 9 is about. I can make mistakes, and the true growth is learning to accept the mistakes and admit them. Number one, to myself. Admit that I may have done something wrong, if that's possible, right? And then to ask forgiveness of another person. I remember after some years in program, one or another programs, making amends to my ex-husband. I don't know if anybody here has ever had the experience of a divorce or a breakup at all. I knew it was all his fault. I mean, after all, I could not have done anything wrong. You know, he was distant, he was not available, he was this and he was that. And it took me years of work to see where I was unavailable, and I was this and that. And I had not been willing to see that before. You know, I was too defensive. And as much as he may have contributed in his own way to the demise of our relationship, I certainly did too. And I remember giving him some specifics and saying, I'm sorry for these actions. That is one of the things about step 9 where we're supposed to be specific. You know, we're not supposed to gloss it over. We're not supposed to say, I'm sorry, we've had such a lousy relationship or whatever. I mean, we're supposed to say some specifics. And I've had to do that. And that's really hard, because then I have to admit I specifically did that wrong to you. And that's a lot harder to admit than just saying, I'm sorry things didn't work out between the two of us. That sounds like an easy one, right? I'm sorry things didn't work out between the two of us, married for 13 years or whatever. Like, there's more to it than that. And that's the really hard part. It's digging into myself. And the fear that comes up, again, of somebody's not going to like me. Well, you know what? If I've done harm to them, they may not be really happy with me anyway. Or they may be happy with me and not even recognize that I felt that I harmed them. Those are always the best amends, you know, when you make amends to somebody and they say, oh, never mind, you know, or I didn't even remember that. And you think, why did I bring it up, right? You know. I really like where it says in our reading that our success in working the ninth step was measured not in others' responses, but in how we fulfilled the actions required of us. The outcome lays with a higher power. So that, again, it's not important what that person thinks of me in the end. It's the fact that I was willing to own up to it. I know I have to make an amends to somebody at the conference here, and I put it off a couple of times, and I know I can't do that much longer. I have to find them and make an amends to them. And it's because I want to be the person that my higher power wants me to be today. I don't want to be sitting in self-centered fear. I don't want to be thinking, oh, they won't mind that much, or, you know, what will they think of me, or what will anybody else think of me? The important thing is that I have to be, quote unquote, big enough, right-sized enough, perhaps, to be able to admit when I've made a mistake and when I've harmed someone. And sometimes mistakes are just mistakes. They don't have to necessarily be harm. I think that's a problem where many people just apologize for everything, you know. I'm sorry that happened for you. Well, that's not an amends that I have to make, you know. And things happen. That doesn't mean I created it. That doesn't have to be my fault. But I have to be, as I said, right-sized in knowing what is my side of the street and then being willing to truthfully and sincerely being willing to amend my behavior. There's certainly discussions, and I'm sure you've all heard discussions of things to do when the person has died. Boy, I'm glad I don't have to do that one, right? And I do still have to do that one. And sometimes those are the most difficult because you don't get to actually sit down with the person and really see their face and really see what they think and really see the forgiveness or lack thereof. That can be really, really difficult. But I think it's really important to write those letters and burn them or send them down the river or read them to your sponsor. Not easy, again, and really, really important. You don't escape just because the person is gone. And then I love the amends that I had to make. For example, I stole food when I was a kid. I'm the oldest of seven, and we didn't have junk food in our house, so I would stop at the grocery store on the way home or the corner store and stop and pick up a couple of things that I really wanted. And I don't know if those people ever saw me take it. I don't know if anybody ever caught that. But, you know, I thought I was getting away with something. So years later in DA, you know, I had to make amends. I sent money off to a charity that I thought that those people would appreciate because the store was out of business. And of course, I took it as a personal responsibility that all the junk food that I took from them put them out of business, which is not right sized either. But it the ninth step is certainly one of the most freeing of our steps. And in the AA Big Book, of course, that's where the promises start. So definitely worth it. Thank you.
Thank you. Same time. Yeah. My name is Bill, and I'm a debtor. So step 10, I think, says continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. So I'm going to talk about step 10 today, and I'm also going to talk a little bit about the others, about 8 and 9. I'm going to start off by saying that I think a lot of times one of the things that happens in our recovery is that we want to just jump straight to step 9 when we come in. You know, I was raised with a lot of fear and shame. Those were my go-to emotions when I was a little kid. And that was a result of, you know, the direct influence of my mother. She was a very angry person. You know, I don't think we could afford the alligator belt, perhaps, but my dad wore Western belts, and my mom would go in and grab one and just, you know, come back and start hitting. So I was very scared of her. And then she also used to say, one of her go-to expressions was, you ought to be ashamed of yourself. So I always felt shame when I was a little kid, and I felt that continuing throughout my adulthood. And the first thing that I wanted to do when I came into the program was to pay back my creditors. Because I felt burning with that shame. I wanted to get that money back to them because I thought if I did that, then I would feel better. But I realized through the efforts of my sponsor, PRGs, people speaking at meetings, that I had to take them in this particular order. And when it came time for me to make my amends, when I was actually doing step 9, part of that was financial amends to corporate entities that I had borrowed from and just never paid back. And one of those I had difficulty tracking down, actually. It was a bank that I had worked for at one point, and the bank itself had been absorbed by another one, and then another one, and then long before that, my debt had been sold off to somebody else. So I had to make all these telephone calls to actually find the person to whom I still owed this money, and I couldn't. So my PRG suggested that what I do is make financial amends to them by giving to organizations that are really important to me. And that became my habit of not strictly tithing every month, but giving a certain amount of money to different organizations that I think need to be supported. So I've continued to do that throughout these years. And even though all of my debt has already been paid off, was paid off probably 20 years ago, I continue to do that. And part of that is just making personal amends to the world for the harm that I did. When I was in high school, I had a girlfriend who, you know, we would go to the mall. We lived in a little town, so it was 70-mile drive each way to go to the mall. And I think record albums were probably about $5 back then. So it was really common for me to say, hey, will you, you know, loan me this or buy this and then I'll pay you back. And of course, I never paid her back because it just didn't occur to me because I had what I wanted. And that was how I got credit card stuff, you know, debt. I had what I wanted, and like the idea of like actually paying for it struck me as faintly ridiculous. And so many years later, and that girlfriend actually became my first wife. So decades later, I sent an email or I sent a letter to her in which I made amends for what I had done. in our relationship, and I sent her a check for an amount of money. I didn't know how much I owed to her, but I sent her a check, and I hadn't talked to her in years, because when you have somebody in your life who treats you like I treated her, you don't often want to talk to them very much. So she and I began a correspondence after that, and today, that person whom I've known for 46 years is one of the closest people I have in my life. And it's one of the greatest miracles in my life that I can have the very close friendship of someone whom I treated badly. And we correspond somewhat frequently by email these days. And as I said, we're very, you know, very close friends. And it's refreshing for me to know someone who's known me for so long. Some of the other amends I made were sending books back to libraries. When I made it from New York City back to Texas, I made it with some books that belonged to New York City libraries, one in my university and I think one at the public library. And so I just mailed those books back to them. I sent a letter saying, you know, here's this book, and if I owe you money for this, please let me know, and we'll figure out how, I'll figure out how to pay that back. And I never heard anything from them. Regarding step 10, Will Rogers, who's one of my role models and higher power models, once said something to the effect, live your life so that you won't be afraid to sell the family parrot to the town gossip. And I certainly didn't live that way before, but it's the way that I try to live my life today. Now, I know in another program they talk about restraint of tongue and pen. And the pen part doesn't give me any problems. But I have a sign at home on my bookcase that says, sarcasm is just one more service we offer. And I find that one of my character defects is being a smart aleck. And I have often in my life said things that I thought were just funny, off-the-cuff things, but they really hurt another person. And one of those was I said to a person when I was in college. Thank you. I said to a person when I was in college, and years later, I saw her at a educational convention. I hadn't seen her in probably 20 years or so. And so I went up to her and told her, I said, you know, back when we knew each other, I said something to you that was very hurtful, and I'm sorry for that. And I didn't tell her what it was, because that probably would have just, you know, hurt again, opened the wound. And she didn't remember it. I'm kind of cursed with, like, where I remember everything. Thank God most people aren't like that. So she accepted my amends and was very touched by it, even though she hadn't remembered the incident. And I feel like every time I do that, I become a little bit better version of me. Now, the version I am of myself right now is not bad. And it took me a long time to realize that I was never bad, which is what I thought that I was because of the messages I received as a child. But I have done hurtful things to people, and I've never meant that. So I made that amends, and I felt a little bit more like myself. When I was early in recovery, I ran into an old high school friend in a bookstore, and I told him I was in a recovery program, and he said, well, what do you recover? And I thought, wow, that's a really great question. And I thought about it for a second, and I said, I recover myself, that person I was meant to be, but somehow I just lost along the way. So I made that amends to my friend. And a couple days ago, I have too many emails in my inbox, and one of the emails that's been haunting me is from a person for whom I've done PRGs. And she reached out and asked if I would be willing to share, you know, in a meeting, which starts at 6 a.m. in my time zone, telephone meeting. And I didn't respond back to her. Thank you. And a couple days ago, I saw that and think, oh, I need to talk to her about that. And who did I get a text from this morning saying she was here and would love to see me? So I ran into her and I made that amends to her for having ignored her request. And then I said, I am willing to be of service. And if we can come up with a time and a date, that would be really good. So I guess what I have to say about this is that we make amends for ourselves. It's the way they sweep our side of the street. We don't do it for other people, and I shouldn't expect some reaction back. Sometimes I make amends, and then I waited then to hear back from that person, and that's not making amends. So I make amends now in order to be that person I was born to be, that God meant me to be, and that my addiction, my shame, my pain, my rage took me away from. And I'm an educator, and I still have that sharp tongue. And sometimes I say funny things in the classroom in order to keep from saying angry things. But the anger comes out through that humor. And when that happens, I realize it, and then I immediately, you know, as soon as the class is over, I take that student aside and say, I'm really sorry that I said that, and I would never want to say anything hurtful to you, and I ask that you will forgive me. And sometimes that's hard for, like, you know, an adolescent or teenager to be able to do. But I hope that by my commitment to the truth, my commitment to being a better person in the world, that that helps them become that as well.
How much time do I have?
Okay. Okay. Thank you very much.
I'm sorry, but that's all the time we have. In closing, we would like to remind you that in Debtors Anonymous, we practice Tradition 12, which is the principle of anonymity. This assures us that freedom to express ourselves at meetings and in private conversations without fear that our comments will be repeated. We keep what is shared at meetings confidential. As we work the steps and practice DA's traditions and concepts, we are reminded that recovery is possible and that we are all here for a common purpose, to recover from compulsive debting one day at a time. Please form a circle and join me in closing the workshop with the Serenity Prayer.
God.